Dayim Sha'alti Me'ito. Two things I ask from you, Shlomo says to God. Al Kimna Mimeni Beterem Omos. Don't withhold it from me before I die. And this is what he asks. Shavud Va'kozov Harchek Mimeni, Reish Va'osher Al Titanli, Atrifeni Lechem Kuki. Okay? Yeah, it sounds like three. Pen Ezba V'chishashti explains a little more next part. Lest Ezba means become Sava. I'll become satiated, full. V'chishashti V'omarti Miyad Hashem. Shachachta, yeah. I'll deny and I'll say who is God. Upen Ivoresh V'ganafti. And lest I become poor and I'll steal, the sofasti shame elokoi. And it means that I'll say God's name in vain. So I'll say shlosh sheker. So yeah. So what does it mean that he asked? What are the two things? The two things that he asked of God is simply that he shouldn't. He shouldn't be overcome by either one of the overwhelmed by either one of the two sides. Which means like this, that there are two dangers in a person's life. One danger in a person's life is that a person is overcome by the world of fantasy. And that's the one where it's pen esba v'chichashti. It means that if he becomes wealthy, it means to say that a person becomes wealthy and becomes overcome. The desire for wealth is really a desire for increasing one's self-esteem. That's the basic underlying desire. And you see today, multi-millionaires have no need for their money, but are constantly involved in accumulating more money. What is that drive? What is that desire? The drive is one thing: to increase one's self-importance. So the increase of one's self-importance, that's pen esba v'chichashti v'amarti mir Hashem. It means that that self-importance cannot coexist with the recognition of God. That's one danger. Danger is a person who is overcome by living in the world of the fantasy. Then he says, upen ivoresh v'ganafti. But there's another danger. Another danger is that a person finds himself in a state of need. In a state of a tremendous need. A person does not realize what he could do if he should find himself in a state of total poverty, abject poverty. A person doesn't realize what he could do. He doesn't even know himself what he could do. But that state is a terribly dangerous state, because it's a state where a person becomes desperate. And a person becomes desperate, he could lose his whole mental equilibrium. That's why the Gemara says that anius ma'averes es odom me'aldato me'aldatkono. Poverty takes a person away from his own mind, his own mental state, and from the state that God knows to be the best state for man. Me'aldatkono. Takes him away from God. Takes him away from God. Me'aldatkono. So that's what it means, shtayim shalti. It means he has two things of God. Two things that he asked of God was, one, that he should never be in a, he shouldn't be overcome. That's what he means. He says, Shavad v'achozav harchek mimeni. How? The two things are, reish v'osher al titan. What does it mean, reish v'osher? Shlomach was not a poor person. What does it mean, reish v'osher al titan? He means insofar as his mental state is concerned. He means, don't make me an individual that feels, that senses wealth, that senses the power of his wealth, and is overcome by his own importance. And on the contrary, I don't want either. I don't want to be a person that's in abject poverty, that is in a state of need. Because he explains, in one case, one denies God. In the other case, a person is driven because of need. He's driven to violate God's law and to simply be over on his das. Be over on his das. Rabbi Dato das Kana, to lose his mental equilibrium. Those two things he says I don't want to encounter in my life. Okay? That's the plain shot in the pocket. That's the point shot in the box. Yeah. So what is Urbaniana saying? So what is Urbaniana saying? I mean, it doesn't seem to fit in line with what Urbaniana says. Urbaniana says like this. He says that what did Shlomo HaMelech ask for? He says Shlomo HaMelech asked for Chachma. Because he said, Hachifeni Lechem Chuki. What does it mean, Hachifeni Lechem Chuki? Hachifeni Lechem Chuki doesn't mean give me my daily bread literally. What it means is that a person's relationship, a person could be a very wealthy person and he could still be Hachifeni Lechem Chuki. You see? What it means is that he shouldn't be overcome by the emotion of the ocean. It means if he views his wealth in a way that it's simply something that's necessary for his daily living. That's how you're saying Lechem Chuki. On the contrary, you see that Rabbeinu Yonah says ki panasasa tiyeh meruba, v'lo yitzarcha l'yigei kapav. We'll have tremendous panasa and he won't have to do anything, he won't have to work, he won't have to exert any effort to sustain himself, he won't have panasasa meruba. So it doesn't mean Hachifeni Lechem Chuki means Hachifeni Lechem Chuki means daily bread means in poverty. No. It means on the contrary. He's broch ad b'lidai. He has plenty. He has plenty. But it means to say how he, it's talking about how he relates to the, to his state, to his financial state. Which means to say that he views it simply as Hachifeni Lechem Chuki. That this is what I need. And he relates to it only as Lechem Chuki. That's the way he relates to his finances. And the whole essence of his financial state is that he has what he needs, and it means nothing more to him than that. You see. So what does it have to do with chachma? Rabbeinu Yonah says that this pasuk has to do with this chazal. Kol makayim es haTorah me'oni sofo l'kana me'osher. All right. Kol mevalas haTorah me'osher sofo vado me'oni. Okay. Now, what does it have to do with this statement? What does it have to do with this statement? What does it have to do with this statement? He says, Omar, he said like this. Imeshal kesef ezov, hine you know some in the chosim garkot. So here, Moshe l'melech. So he explains like this. Says Shlomo HaMelech said like this. Says Moshe to HaMelech. She'omar la'avdo she'alma etem lach. The king said to his servant, tell me whatever you want, I'll give you. Omar, he said, Imeshal kesef ezov, hine you know some in the chosim garkot. Who knows me? So he'll give me a lot of properties, a lot of wealth. Eshal es basa melech li liisha. I'll ask for the king's daughter. Vakol b'chlal, everything's included. Kachem ha-shlom olav ha-shalom. Eshal es ha-chochma, vakol b'chlal. Why? Ki b'tzeh la-chochma, b'tzeh la-kosef. Because a person that's a chochem knows how to earn money. B'tzeh la-chochma, b'tzeh la-kosef. So what is it? How is this tied to the statement? Hachifeni Lechem Chuki. It seems what he's quoting seems to be a totally different thing. I mean, over here he's saying that a person called a lomed as a Torah me'oni means he'll become a chacham. Once he becomes a chacham, it's different than the Rambam. Because the Rambam explains it to me purely in terms of the Ashgacha. But he explains no. He explains that it's not just in terms of the Ashgacha. It's a practical thing. Because a person that learns the chachma will know how to earn money, make money, and then he doesn't have any problems. He'll have everything. You see. But what does that have to do with the pasuk, though? The pasuk doesn't seem to be in line with it. The pasuk seems to be a totally different thing. It's a totally different statement. Yeah. So what's the answer? And it's an interesting. What he means is that it doesn't make any sense. Shlomo HaMelech's question does not make any sense unless you interpret it as meaning that he's asking for chachma. That's what he said. Why? Because nobody in their right mind would say he would make such a request. What do you mean? Reish v'oshel tikunlech. Don't make me a wealthy person, don't make me a poor person. Hachifeni lechem chuki. Why should a person make such a request? It's nonsensical. The person should say, on the contrary, he doesn't want to be an ani, it's true. But why shouldn't he be an ashir? Why shouldn't he be an ashir? Why not? Well, Hachifeni Lechem Chuki. There's some virtue in just having it meted out every day what you need. What kind of a virtue is that? Yeah. So what kind of request is it? So what's the answer? The answer is that the request is not for the overt state, like we explained. What was the request for? The request was that he didn't want to become overcome by the fantasies of wealth, or to be overwhelmed by the necessities, by a person's needs. He shouldn't become desperate. Yeah. So why should a person request that? The answer is very simple. The answer is because there's only one perfection that such a state leads to. That's for Chachma. Chachma, knowledge, is something which the mind, in order for a person to gain knowledge, so he has to have a certain state. The state is that a state in which he's free from both the emotional, being overcome by the emotional, and also being overcome by the physical necessities. Either state prevents him from being involved, from the mind being involved in what its own nature is to involve itself in, which is Chachma. The state of Chachma requires neither. The person's involved in the taivas, his mind isn't free. The mind can't operate. If a person, on the other hand, is involved in just trying to maintain himself, again, his mind is afraid. So the reason that Shlomo HaMelech made this request, what's the reason for the request? There can only be one objective, only one reason why he would ask for such a thing. If a person is involved in the world of taivas, they'd never say, don't make me an usher. Doesn't make any sense. A person who is looking for a certain state, a person that's looking for Chachma, you see, a person that's looking for the state of Chachma, is the only one that would make such a request. So when it says "Shtayim Shalti Meitach Al Timna Mimeni B'Terem Amos," that was his request. His request was for Chachma. He said, "I don't want to be overwhelmed by my emotions. I don't want to be overwhelmed by my needs. Why? Because then I'll be in the perfect state. What is the perfect state? Where the mind is free to simply pursue knowledge and to pursue what its own nature is to pursue." But in order to have that state, you can't be in either one of the extremes. Okay? So the whole purpose is in order to have Chayel Mabon, we have to be free. The mind has to be free. That is the perfect state. And it's true. That's why Biki Shiakov Leishu Vashalot is right. But that's something, well, over there means that sometimes the Ashgacha is such that for a particular tzaddik in a particular instance, it can't be that way. That's a different thing. But there's general principles. You see, that's what you have to differentiate between. That's what I was mentioning before. That many people have difficulties because insofar as emunah is concerned, insofar as understanding what the Torah means, because they look at some at certain principles in the Torah and then they see on the contrary, it doesn't work out for certain people. There's certain tzaddikim that were poverty stricken. But you have to be careful with the first answer too. That many times what you think is poverty stricken is not. If the person is free to learn, then he's a very wealthy man. He's wealthier than the wealthiest millionaire. Because his life is free, and like the Rabbeinu Yonah says, he's involved in a world of tremendous happiness and joy. He's constantly seeing God's Chachma. There's no greater state. So yeah, you can't, it doesn't matter how much, it's not a relative thing. But even so, there are certain times that a certain tzaddik doesn't have that. But that's the Ashgacha. That's the Ashgacha of Hashem. That was Yaakovino, particular Ashgacha. But as a general principle is the brachas of the Torah we see. The brachas of the Torah can nothing be more general. That is the bracha. And you should be free from being pulled to both sides. And a person should strive to place himself in that state. That's why I say that's really what's wrong with a person involving himself in taivas. What's wrong with involving himself in taivas? It's not the taiva per se that's so bad. It means that a person involves himself in taivas, that energy is not only wasted energy, but it pulls him away from that equilibrium that he needs for thought and for pursuing chachma. Chachma requires a certain state of mind, not a state of pleasure and not a state of pain. Neither. You have to have a certain equilibrium, and that's what a person should strive for. So in that way, that's what Shlomo Melech asked for. That's what I meant. So therefore, what it means is like this. So he says like this. So it's true on two counts. It's true in terms of the Ashgacha, like the Rambam says, and it's true in a practical, from a practical standpoint also, that if a person is in a state of depravity, is in a state where he doesn't have what he a state of deprivation. I'm sorry, a state of deprivation. A person in a state of deprivation, what it means, what the statement means is like this. A person called Matayimus Tarme Oni, it means like this. It means that the person doesn't have the fear of the pain of being in that state of deprivation. In other words, if he fears that state, if his emotional needs prevent him from being preoccupied with learning, then he'll never reach a state of perfection. In other words, let me put it this way: in the practical terms, that means in the practical terms, you see it all the time. What it means is that a person who has to follow along with the world's idea of success, a person that follows that pattern, and he does what he has to in terms of getting his education and then getting involved in his profession, and he simply follows the way of the world. In terms of his needs, can never reach that perfection. Can never reach that perfection. I'm not saying that a person like that is not a worthwhile individual, could even be a tzaddik, but he will not be this level. This is a different level. Kol ha'makayim es ha'Torah may only shofa l'kana me'osh is a different level. Not everybody can be zofa at this level. Like the Rambam says, when it comes to Talmud Torah, in the soul libo, if a person is on a high level, then he can reach that state of perfection. This is a special state. It means to say that there are individuals who do not follow the way of the world in terms of their success. They don't just follow along. Anyone who follows along the general established patterns, he goes for his education, he gets his panasa, he has his job, he has his security. It means he follows the regular ways of life that society has created for him. That is not this individual. This individual is one that can go away from society, walk away from it. He sees that the main thing that is necessary for himself is Chochmah HaTorah, and he simply can't give up on Chochmah HaTorah, no matter how difficult it is, even if it means forfeiting his future. He has to, his future in terms of what the world considers future. It's not important to him. What he's interested in is one thing. He's interested in Chochmah. And what the Mishnah says is that, on the contrary, you would think that such an individual would have a very sorry result. But no, just the opposite is true. That this individual, because he involves himself, because he walks away from the security of society that society offers him, and because he involves himself in Torah, on the contrary, he will be an individual that in the end will be wealthy and will be able to sit and learn without being involved in his daily needs, whereas the other individual who follows the ways of the world will never get out of it. He'll never be able to. That's the second part of the memory. Means that the other individual simply can't escape. It requires a certain type of person. I'm not saying that everyone can do such a thing. Neither is the Mishnah saying that. But it means that's exactly the type of person that it's referring to. It requires a tremendous amount of courage for a person to do that. But it means to say that a person that does do that, in the end, will have true success. Whereas the other person will never be successful. Will be successful in the ways of the world, yes. But an inner success will never have. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah basically says. Rabbeinu Yonah says that, he says, Ki panasasati emarubo, v'lo yitzarech al yigi atapov, ki yochal v'yilmod b'simcho v'tuv levav. You see? He'll eat and he'll drink with happiness, but tuv levav, great satisfaction, great personal happiness. Ki b'chochma yilo kol tuv. Because with chochma he'll have everything. Whereas the other individual will have what he bargained for. He followed the way of society, he followed it very secure, his profession, took care of himself very well, but he will never have this. A different kind of a thing? The other person, I'm not saying society basically is made up of the other type of people on the whole. But this is speaking about a special type of individual. The Mishnah is referring to a special type of person. Like the Rambam says, the Rambam refers to this person in the end of Chashmita Yavo, a person that decides that this is the only thing he wants in life, and that's it. But he says, so he has a special hashgacha that things are worked out for. That's what the Rambam says. But basically, that's the same thing. That's the mission. It's an interesting thing. Sometimes in Pirkei Avos, Pirkei Avos is the area of Pirkei Avos is an area of perfection, and there's much advice in Pirkei Avos that everyone could take and can learn from. But there are certain areas where it's not so easy. This is one of those areas. I would not say. You notice where the Mishnah says, "Kol hamakayim es haTorah me'oni, sof lakayim me'osher." It doesn't say, is not giving advice to everyone to go run out and jump and do this. Not everybody can do this. A person has to know himself. I would say this. I would say that the person that does this is not the person that takes the advice to do it. It's a person that can't not do it. That's what it means. He simply is incapable of not doing it. Because he can't get involved. The success of the world and the station that the world offers him at the end of the line, and the whole process, he simply can't go through it, because it means to him, he's giving up. He can't do it. But what the Pirkei Avos says is that such a person, on the contrary, will wind up with true success, whereas the other person will never have it. And it is true in life, and you can see that certain individuals do it and are successful in it, and it exists. It exists today because it's actually an expression of the Hashgacha. That some people can do such things and some people didn't. Can be done. That's what the Mishnah. The Mishnah says it is a prevalent reality. But again, it's not something you can't just go out and you'll go into a high school and you'll say, everybody, don't go into your professions anymore, and that's it. You just sit and learn. That's fanaticism. That's nonsense. A person has to go into his profession, a person has to live in their holom, and he has to take into consideration society. But nevertheless, that's what the average person does and has to do. But there are those individuals who simply are drawn. So as Ram said, the Talmud Torah, Mishin is so libo l'tayim mitzvah zukaroy. It requires a certain nesiyas halev. But this nesiyas halev, you see, is something which you can't mandate nesiyas halev. Nesiyas halev is a different thing. And that's the memory of the Chazal. That through knowledge, a person might at a later date be able to, but he can't just rampantly just become a tzaddik and I'm going to do this. That's not the kind of guarantee it is. The guarantee is for the individual who's basically not looking for the guarantee. Okay? It's like the story with Ram, that he jumped into the kitchen ice, Ram jumped into the kitchen ice because he had no choice. Aharon said, look, I'll see what happens. Okay, now I'll jump in too. Didn't help.
What?
That's right. The guarantee is not for the one who does it. Guarantee is not for one. It's just the statement is a recognition of that reality. That reality is true. Side point. Well, not actually a side point, but going back to what the Rambam says on the flip side of it. The other side is like this. A person who has osher, there are sometimes you have an individual that has wealth, has plenty of time, plenty of money, and instead of involving himself in Torah, he involves himself in nonsense. It says, L'sof yisroshesh v'yetzelo azman et shi yasibas betulo b'kriyo kirdoso b'lechem l'machalo. Alright? So, it's an interesting thing, but according to the memory, it comes out that God, what does God do? God gives him Torah, so he gives him difficulties. So that he can't involve himself in learning. And he can't perfect himself. Why should God do that? Isn't that a strange thing? That God should take away from a person the means of his perfection sounds like the worst possible onish. Not only, it's not even an onish. An onish means it's something for your benefit. But this would seem to be more than an onish. It seems to be something which would be an impossibility. That God should take away, the owner should be, that God's going to take away perfection. And then the world was just on to torment to make me in a situation where I can't gain anything. So what's the whole purpose? Just to torment the person, destroy a person? It's a strange kind of phenomenon. It's a strange kind of phenomenon. What the second side of the member. The second side of the member. According to the Rambam. According to the Rambam. Yes. As a matter of fact, and as a matter of fact, the Rabbein Yon agrees with this. Because Rabbein, just take what Rabbein Yon says. Says Gam ki, he says, she is tachol chacha panasus when sena ad ki lo yeh lo pnei lasek b'torah Gam ki yitza. He won't have time to learn Torah even if he wants to. And he says mida keneged mida v'nimtza yotzei min ha'olam b'lo Torah. That's an onus, boy. That's an onus. I mean, you can't get any have any onus after that. That's it. I mean, an onus is always a means to propel a person to doing the good. Well, over here, what are you doing? Over here, you're making the person destroying him. And it's total destruction. I think you say God actually goes out and to destroy a person to prevent him from ever becoming a person. How could it be? Okay? Yeah. What's the answer?
Yeah.
Yeah. The general rule. It means as a general rule, a person that has the means to learn Torah and doesn't take the opportunity, doesn't utilize his money to learn Torah, he's going to lose it. That's what it means. It means it's a general principle. Of course, it doesn't mean every wealthy man, because every wealthy man doesn't have the opportunity, doesn't know about Torah, it's not possible. But it means a certain individual, a person finds himself in a state where he has that bechir, he has that choice. He can make the choice, he can learn, or he can waste his time. And because of his wealth, he chooses to waste his time. So in the end, God removes the world from him. He spends his life trying to. He can't learn Torah anymore. It's impossible for him. He learns less than he ever learned. When he was wealthy, he wasted his time, but at least he wanted to learn a little bit. Now his whole day is taken up with just trying to make ends meet. That's the hashgacha. So how could that be? So he's nimtza yotzei min ha'olam b'lo Torah. How could God do that to a person? Take away Torah from him. What's the answer? So the same thing with you also. Fair test. He says that the worst klola is that the person is, that's what it means by the sicknesses and all the things in Torah, klolas, are only the person should not have any time anymore to learn. No time in Torah. You understand the ownership to perfect the person, the ownership to take away time from learning. What it means is like this. What it means is that God takes away the opportunity of learning Torah from this person. A person has a choice in this world to guide his life the way he wants. To guide his life the way he wants. He has many choices. It means to guide his life the way he wants and choosing a profession that he wants. It means it's total, Bechir is a total thing. Not just with regard to religious things that Bechir exists. It exists with regard to many things. The way the Rambam explains it in Shemana Prachim. But one of the areas that the Bechir exists is insofar as learning is concerned. In other words, like this, the essence of the Bechira means that a person has the ability to carve out for himself a certain type of life. He has the ability to do that. He can make himself a life of Chachma, he can make himself a life of a great musician, he can be whatever he wants to do, the type of life that he wants to carve out for himself. Again, that's the essence of the Bechira. The essence of the Bechira is that in this life a person should be able to accomplish and to be able to be what he wants. What he wants to do. That's in his hands. That's what the Rambam says, that's the Yesod HaDas. Against those who maintain that man is constrained to live a certain kind of life. Now, what does the Rambam mean? Rambam Ben Yonah. What they mean is like this. You see, insofar as that is concerned, God can take away the person's behavior. God can take away the person's behavior. Insofar as the recognition is concerned, that's a bechira. That's a different area of bechira. In other words, the individual, insofar as tshuva is concerned, tshuva is based on recognition. Tshuva is based on recognition. Now, the way God works, the way the hashgacha works is that if a person misuses that which is appropriated to him, so the law of justice demands that it should be removed from him. There's no reason for him to have the wealth now. So now it's removed from him. That's the law of justice. And therefore, he doesn't have any time to sit and learn. But it doesn't remove from him the state of recognition. Mentally, the state of recognition of mida keneged mida, to recognize what happened to him. and more, and that tshuva is possible. That tshuva is possible. That tshuva is possible. But you have to realize there's a great loss. There's a great loss. It's a tremendous loss. Everything, there's a certain thing is ma'uvas lo yuchaliskan. A person always likes to feel that he always change things around, and always it's never too late. No, it is too late sometimes. It is too late. It may never be too late in terms of a certain type of perfection, but another type of perfection could be gone. As a matter of fact, that's what Chazal means. They say yesh kona olamo b'sho achas. What does it mean yesh kona olamo b'sho achas? So Chazal say that sometimes a person can have a hero tshuva the last day of his life, and he'll be kona olam haba. But what does it mean? Does it mean to say that this person is going to be on the same level as the Talmud Chacham who spent his life in learning? Impossible. I do not believe that Chazal would say that what it means. It means yesh kona olamo b'sho achas means that the last moment of his life he can have a hero tshuva. Yes, that's true. It means that all the evil that is in him can be totally undone, and now his soul is looking for perfection. And he's going all about it, that's true. But in terms of the life of Torah, what he would have had he done tshuva years before, you see, and had he spent his life in Chochmah, that's gone. That he can't have. Yeah, he's going all about it, no question. But it's a different kind of a level. Different kind of a level. So what it means is like this, that the onesh that a person has in wasting his time and not spending his time in Torah when God gives him the ability, the onesh is taken away from him. It's true, because that's the way it should be. That's what justice demands. It's true, he's not destroyed because he could recognize. He's capable of recognizing this, and he's still capable of being a Ben Olam Haba. But insofar as the Torah is concerned, that's it. The Ashgacha, he had his chance, and the Ashgacha is over, and that's it. Sometimes certain things are too late. But God doesn't take away the opportunity for him to do Shulim, he's a Jew, he's been all right. But he'll never have the same situation, the same Chayel Ganolam Abba, that he would have had he utilized his time for Chachma, had he become a great Tamar Chacham. That's Yesh Kon Olamo B'Shoachas. It's a different kind of Olam. It's Olamo. It's true, Yesh Kon Olamo, but it's not the same thing. That's the statement of the Chazal. That's what it means. So a person should not be under the illusion. A lot of times, see, tshuva is a wonderful thing, but sometimes tshuva gives a person illusions. Yeah, tshuva, it's always possible. I always do tshuva. It's always possible for me to do tshuva in the future, and I can always become a tzaddik gomor. Like the Rambam says, it's a tshuva gemura, and even a minute before a person dies, he can become a big tzaddik. He has a fantasy sometime in his life he's going to become a great tzaddik. You see, it's an absurd fantasy, because the point is insofar as the time that he could have spent in learning and in Talmud Torah and in Chochmah, had he done tshuva before, that time's gone. That's muvas lo yuchaliskan. That's why they say that, what does the Gemara say, yafashah achas b'Torah mitzvahs b'olam hazeh b'kol chayei olam haba. The gra, that's what the gra, they say about the gra, that he was crying when he anticipated death, because they said, that's it. And nothing can be done anymore. The state is final. The final state. The finality to it. The finality is what the state. Not the. He wasn't afraid of death. He was looking forward to Chayei Olam Haba, but there's a certain finality. I mean, that's it. Just whatever you have, you have. So I remember when I was in Eretz Yisrael, so they say if you go into the Arizal's mikvah, so they say you'll definitely, there's a Kabbalah that you'll definitely do tshuva a minute before you die. Before you die, sometime before you die, you're going to do tshuva. That's what a lot of people would. So a lot of people were jumping into the mikvah. They say, I went in, it was a very hot day. I was just ready to cool off. But you see, but that fantasy is a dangerous thing. Dangerous thing. Why? Because people who do that, the purpose, the reason why they do it is because it's a tremendous motivation. What the person is saying is like this: look, I don't have to worry about what's happening now because I'll do tshuva sometime in the future before I die. Even if it was true, it would never be the same. And that's what the Rabbeinu Yonah says: the nimtza yotzei min ha'olam below Torah. This man leaves this world without Torah. He can do tshuva, but that's it. He doesn't have rights of claim. This is not, what does Chazal say? This is Ba'olam Sheinu Shelach. It's an Olam Sheinu Shelach. In other words, God's Hashgacha is such that he gives certain situations according to certain principles. So if a person The purpose of the wealth was for the as a means for the, to become a chacham, a talmid chacham. And now it's now he hasn't used it for that. It's taken away from him. That's the end of it. You can't go back. It's gone. There's no more hashgacha. The hashgacha took it away, and that's it. Now he's stuck. The only thing left he has, he can become Baal Shuva. Yes, but a talmid chacham will never be able to come. No, too late. And we say he won't be able to do tshuva. I don't see anywhere in the Mishnah that says he won't be able to do tshuva. That's the only time we say a person can't do tshuva. It's very rare occasions. The Rambam has his own theory over there in the Shmona Prakim about certain cases where God takes away the ability to do tshuva. That's only a rare case. And the only other case we have is the Chof Gal of the Dvarim Makfas Tshuva. But aside from that, I don't see this being one of them. A person that didn't learn when he had the ability to is Makfas Tshuva. Doesn't say that. But it's a separate thing. It means the Ashgacha gave him this wealth. Now it took it away from him because there's no purpose in him having the wealth, and that's the end of it. He can't do anything about it. He can do tshuva fine, wonderful. He'll be a tzaddik, but he'll never be a talmid chacham. That's yotzei min ha'olam v'lo. If God wouldn't remove the wealth from him, he'd be in a worse state. He'd be in a worse state. Why? Because then he'd never recognize his place in his place in the universe. He'd never recognize the ideas. He might be able to gain more knowledge in terms of accumulating knowledge, but that went through many times. That even though a person could be, well, you saw in the last mission, a person could be a great Talmud Chacham and still be a Shoter Rosh Gasruach. The important thing is that a person should know his place in reality. And by recognizing his place in reality and recognizing that he forfeited his opportunity, recognizing God's justice and the way God rules the world, that is his perfection after that. Now that's his perfection. If God would permit him to continue to learn Torah, it would be to his detriment. Because then he would be accumulating a lot of facts, but he wouldn't understand anything about God's justice. So he has to lose it. It's his benefit to lose it, because it comes to that recognition. But it's an unfortunate time to stay, because that's all he's going to have. He can't go beyond that. He'll never be able to have a Torah and a Chachma as a means to propel him to a higher level of perfection. He has to remain in that level. Yes. Valasar seems to be a person that has the opportunity, it means simply a person that has the opportunity to sit and learn and spends his time in nonsense. That's what it means. He says, but my chalub, the mishter, the nuchra, he's running after this type of this luxury, that luxury, this enjoyment, that enjoyment. He's following all his pleasures instead of spending his time and pursuing knowledge and chachma. That's what it means. It doesn't mean a person is a wealthy person doesn't know anything about Torah. It's a different type of person. I mean, a person is busily accumulating money, doesn't have any concept about Torah. That's another kind of person. He has a different he has a different lot. This is only speaking about this particular kind of individual. Now, there's an interesting Ralbag over there, a very interesting Ralbag. Ralbag interprets this whole, all these psukim differently. Initially, yeah. It's worthwhile to go through the Ralbag. It happens to be, the Ralbag was a great philosopher. And the Ralbag over here follows his style. It says, Shtayim Shalti. When Shlomo Melech says to God, he says, two things I asked of God. Al tinna mi meni b'tarim amos. He says, why? Ki acha amavis le yischadesh lo adam kinyan ashlemus and lo b'chaya. After a person dies, he says, there's no more profession. As I mentioned before. That's why he says, b'tarim amos. What does Yisrael Melech say? I asked of God two things I asked of you before I die. Because he recognized what I mentioned before, the finality of death. Death means it's it. And it's not just the finality of death, but it's really the finality of every moment of life. That's what I want to make clear. Every day that goes by where a person wastes his time, that day is gone. He has nothing to do about it anymore. Bali Musa said, Adam doeg alibu damov, ve'ena doeg alibu yamov. That's it. Okay. Shav udvar kozov hachek mimen. He says like this. He says, what does it mean when it says shav? Emptiness. Shav means it means vain, something in vain. Udvar chosav means something false. Hachek mimeni, keep it away from me. He says like this. Basagosi shav udvar chosav. It means shelo ishtabesh ves balbel be'iyuni. Unbelievable the Ralbag explains this, these psukim, as being metaphorical. It doesn't really mean the way they're bending on it. It doesn't mean wealth, and it doesn't mean poverty. It's not discussing that. I'm not talking about that. In Mishle, the Shlomo Aruch is using the Sholem all along. That's the very name of the Sefer. So he says over here, wealth and poverty doesn't mean physical wealth and poverty. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking, it's a mashal. It means something else. What does it mean? He says like this. He explains. It all is referring to Chachma. You see, everybody agrees that these psukim are referring to Chachma. Even Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah interprets it in this flame shot that it removes the difficulties from Chachma. But he explains it metaphorically. He says like this. He says, what does it mean? He says, Shelo ishtabesh ves balbel bi'iyuni. V'shelo yiyah iyuni bedvar hevel, she'en lo metzias. Kilu toma, she'yiyah iyan bimtzias harekos. V'yidne she'romas b'shov, el mashu sheker dvar chozov. Sheker udvar chozov el mashu hevel. O hepachza. It's like this. V'yine tikra lo'odam ha'chakira vo'iyun b'mashu'ina nimtza l'chashvo. She'hu nimtza im mipnei shibush ha'medame, in mitnei sipur kozev karlo, in mitnei deos yirshu bozem mizuloso. Okay, vashela beizi shlotikin li only vidalus bideos lekatzer bideos mashe eshlodin lasada. Okay, so again, he says all these things are intellectual things. The first one, shavudvar kozev, he says, is referring to a person who doesn't know how to investigate. He's shavudvar kozev, says he's become mavulbal. A person is asking God for the ability to be able to understand, to gain knowledge. And he says like this. He says, so you should keep away from me, you should prevent me from two things. He says, first of all, I shouldn't, shov means, he says, it means false. Yeah, it means like this. Oh, hepach. He doesn't know which one is which, but he says, what it means like this, there's two things. Sometimes a person makes mistakes in his investigation. That's one possibility. And sometimes a person spends his time investigating areas that are a waste of time, an absolute waste of time. So that's what he says. Shavu dvar kozov hachegimene. He asks God that you should help me, that I shouldn't have either the inability to make mistakes. You know, I shouldn't have the inability to go to understand an area, which means I'll make mistakes and have totally erroneous notions, number one, or to waste my time in areas that is simply hevel, waste of time, no purpose in going into those areas. An important statement, because you see, people could spend their lives, and I would say that part of this is a lot of modern epistemology. Is a shav v'chozav. He's a person who wastes his time in thinking about whether he exists or whether he doesn't exist. He could spend his whole life and simply come up with nothing. If he comes that he exists, it's too late. And if he doesn't exist, it's not. At any rate, so he says like this. He says, v'ashela beis. He says, what's the second question? That's the first question. Second question is, shlotiten li oni v'dalos b'deos. You see? He says, you shouldn't give me poverty, a poverty of knowledge, so that I will be shortchanged. That I should not be able to understand that which man can comprehend. That's the oni. The oni means the poverty of knowledge. He says, below titan ligam kein osher. They shouldn't give me wealth either. What's wealth? How can you be wealthy, overly wealthy, insofar as knowledge is concerned? He says, "Leischakein b'ma she'ein la'odah masagasa." To try to become a chacham is something that man is incapable of understanding. Achashpili b'deos hamozon haroi l'sichla lo pachas v'lo yosef. He says, but I should have exactly that which is necessary. I should be in the correct wavelength of human knowledge. I shouldn't be in a state where it's an amazing thing. It is very true. Sometimes a person's makatsa b'deos. Like a person says, look, I can't understand. I'm going to restrict myself. Even learning, you find things like that. doctor said, look, I can't go into this Machlokas, it's not for me. I'm not on the level. We're not on the level. We can't understand this. We just have to learn the plain shot, and that's it. That's a Makata B'deus. It means that he could really understand it. If he tried, he'd be able to understand it. But he has this, he has a fear, and he says, look, who am I? Me and Ochi. I can't do it. So I'm satisfied to learn what my Rebbe tells me, and this is that, and then fine, I don't go any further. That's a Makata B'deus. If he's able to, in fact, go further, there is such an emotional state where a person is in the Makata B'deus, you see? So that's the first state. Now, what is the state of the wealth? He says like this. The state of wealth is just the opposite. It means the person goes into areas he's not ready for. He's not capable of going into it. But his desire for knowledge, his desire to know, brings him into areas where he had no right to go. The Rambam talks about that a lot in the Morning of Ochot. Yep, he should not have gone there, he wasn't ready for it. He says that also is a great danger. He says, Hachifein Lechem Chuki means, give me exactly what I need in terms of gaining knowledge. Now he says like this. It's interesting. He goes on to say this. Vazos ba'emes hi she'ela gadola. He says, this is a great request, the Rambam says. Lo yitochein sheyimotze ish yagia eleho ba'alpayim. You say. Aval hu roi sheyishtadel kol echod mehanoshim hama'ayim bozeh kecheskes hayad. You see, look at it. He says, this is a very great request, and very, very few people will ever achieve this. Will ever achieve this. You're more than a thousand. Now he explains what's going to happen if he doesn't. Because Shlomo Melech goes on to explain. If I don't have this, then either way, there's going to be something detrimental. He says, yeah. This is an amazing thing. He says, Pen esba leschakim b'mashalu uchalasigo v'omer miyu Hashem yisbach. He says, if I go into areas that I'm not ready for, so I'll say, who is God? Ratzaloma maho v'zed dover lo yitochin sheyusag elo l'shem yisbach v'lazet tovo zos hachakira el she'ekochesh v'ese eloka midover bilti. Mahos bilti nimtza. He says like this. Mahos bilti nimtza can. The yavi zel kfira ulahamin bizuloso. You see? He says, in other words, because then what's going to happen is, I'm going to, it's like Spinoza, for instance. It means he'll come to ideas that are false, wrong ideas about God. So that's what it means. But Mati Mi Hashem, it means he's going to say things about God that aren't true. So it comes out that the God that he believes in is not really what God is. So it comes out that he's a kofa. That's what he explains. It means in the Yavi Zalek Fira, Lahamin Bizuloso. You see? And what's the opposite side? Upene Voresh Ve'ekotzer Me'achikor B'mashe Efshel Adam Asagoso. The other way is that I'll be poverty, I will not permit myself to understand what I can understand about God. He says, "V'yez esibo shelo emod al chiyuv hayos shom eloka." He says, and this will cause me not to know that God exists, not to have knowledge of God's existence, God's necessary existence. Hu shelo emod al chiyuv hayos shom eloka, hu ha poel lechol hanemtzos. He is the source of everything that exists. The yiyah kitsuri ova she'egnova eloka. Then it means I will be stealing God. You see? Mehanem tzos. It means I'll be stealing God away from those things which exist. It means he will not have knowledge of God's existence. Va'omer she'ein sham eloka kimo she'oya omer apikoris v'siyato. Ve'echshov kilo tafasti bozeh kiyim Hashem levad, ki hanikrabo ein lo metzius. He says like this. Ve'achshav kilo tefaze kiyim Hashem levad, ki hanikrabo ein lo metzius. The yezek yoser kosher ba'ofen ma mimashi yagia behefseid misibas hischakem yoser mimashi roi. Amazing near Rabbi. He's saying like this. He's saying, He's saying, "Ve'achshav kulot tafasti b'zakiyim Hashem levad." In other words, I'll think it's only between me and God. That's right. Exactly. He won't see. It doesn't mean he's going to say God doesn't exist. It's an interesting thing. It means he will never be able to gain knowledge of God's existence. That's what he means. He'll never be able to gain knowledge of God's existence. And the amazing, what he says, the amazing thing he says, the yezeh yoser kosher ba'ofen ma mimashi yagia mehefsid besibas hischakein yoser mimasharoi. He says that would be worse than too much. It's an amazing statement that they're all by. Everybody thinks just the opposite. Everybody thinks exactly the opposite. It's an amazing thing. He says that a person that he's worse because in other words like this, the person that goes too far, so it means that his hasaga of God is something which is not true. His description of God is not true. He has no right to. He doesn't understand certain things. He's trying to understand God more than he's capable of. He says that type of a person will attribute to God certain things which aren't true. That would be like Vayechazus Lakim Vayokla Vayishta. Okay? Vasachas Raglav Kamasi Livnas Asapir, like the Ram explains. They attributed to God certain features that don't exist in the deity, don't exist in God. Alright? That's Ishak and Yosef. That's the ocean. But the Oni is where the person says, I'm not going to go into the area. I'm not ready to do it. That's Oni. I'm not ready. I'm not going to be involved in this at all. So it comes out that his belief in God is not based on any knowledge. He has no knowledge of God. It just remains a belief, but it doesn't remain any knowledge. If he's capable of gaining knowledge and he doesn't do it, he says, then he's worse than the one that went too far. It's an amazing thing. He's worse than the one. He says, because he has no knowledge of the idea of the necessary existence of God. That's what he says. And the truth of the matter is, he's right. Everybody thinks the opposite way. Everybody thinks, oh, that's what he says. He says, there are two different extremes that you find. People who say, we can't go into this. We can't get any more knowledge in this area. That's it. Look, I'm a from Jew, and that's it, and there's nothing more to it. Okay? And more to pshuta, finished. Okay? That's the person's mekatze b'deis. That's the mekatze b'deis. That's the oni. Then there's the person who jumps in. He's going to understand all the metaphysics. He's ready. So he's very interested in all metaphysics. Also wrong. What he asked, that was the two things he asked of God. The two things he asked of God, the second thing was that he should have the proper attitude and he shouldn't have any emotions drawing him either way so that his investigation will proceed precisely in accordance with the way a person, a human being, should proceed. The Tzelem Elokim should proceed. Which means that according to Yadus, the Tzelem Elokim in man, if left alone, will proceed naturally on the right way. The problem is it's drawn by emotional forces either on different sides. He was mispalel that those forces should never, that the Ashgacha should be on his side and shouldn't allow situations to take place that will cause his emotions to be pulled in different directions and will interfere with his investigation. You see? But it's interesting how he says that the side of the impoverished side is worse. And you know, I was thinking about it. Because on the surface you say, no, I'm better off, I have less knowledge, right? No, but he has to be right. Because, for instance, I bought Nichnas Lepardus. The Gemara says, I bought Nichnas Lepardus. Only Rabbi Akiva was the one that was Nichnas B'Shalom and Yatzah B'Shalom. And the other ones weren't. So apparently they weren't able to do it. Yeah, but certainly they were, you're not going to say that they weren't on a higher level than a person who simply never doesn't have the ideas of God. He's just a plain person who believes in God, yeah, fine, but he doesn't have any knowledge. You can't say it on the contrary. That's why he says that side
the side of impoverishment is worse than the other side. That's what they're about. Yes.
The two motivations are really parallel, are paralleled by the mushal. The mushal is Osher and Anias. And Elos by say Osher Yana Asis. And wealthy man answers with strength. Why? Arrogantly. There's certain arrogance which a person has because of his own self-evaluation. On the contrary, a person is impoverished. He's a person who is a shuffle. And the, I think that's what the Rambam means when the Rambam says that because of the Rambam says it many times, he mentions this, that a lot of Chachma was lost because of the Golos. Because of the Golos. They were driven from place to place. It wasn't just the physical Golos. Not that they didn't have time to learn so much when they were traveling. But it means to say when you take a nation and you break them down emotionally, so it affects them in terms of their quest for knowledge. But they've broken down emotionally. They don't have the strength and the courage to be able to think properly. They will think properly. That's why you see, like the Rishonim. Rishonim were different. They had a different mental state. They thought in broad scope. Broad scopes. I mean, it wasn't. They had a certain framework, a certain strength of character, a certain courage. It wasn't. They didn't have any distortion, any type of distortions mentally. They're able to do that. So, but the gullus has an effect on a person. His ego becomes impoverished. He can't do it. It affects him. The emotional state, the way a person feels about himself, affects his thinking also. It takes for a person to come out with a tremendous discovery. It takes a tremendous amount of courage. A person's not courageous, he can't do it. It's not just the mental ability. Emotions play a tremendous role. On the other hand, the haughty person, Chazal say, can never be a Talmud Chacham. Can't. Impossible. Because everything that he says has to be right because he says it. So it's impossible for him to be a true investigator. It's the two emotions. The emotions of a rush and the emotions of an usher. That's what it is. That's what he, that was his tool. Okay, yeah. But it's also with regard to Talmud, with regard to learning in all areas. It's even with regard to learning a piece of Gemara. And certainly with regard to a person's pursuit of philosophy, a philosophical knowledge, Chachma Salakus, like the Rishonim say. That certainly is, has an effect in that area more than any other area. It's more detrimental there. Yeah.
Meir Omer, paragraph E, Mishnah Yud. Having memayed be'esik vasot v'torah. Shekasim malachtafa aroi. V'tarashvatev. Which means to say that your main preoccupation in life should be your involvement and knowledge. And your business should be a side preoccupation. Okay? Statement is the concept that a person should try to work out his life in a way that he doesn't have to spend most of his day in securing his financial needs. And that means anyone that wants to live this way has to be actively involved in setting up his life in such a manner that the main time of his day, his main involvement should be in pursuit of knowledge. That's the meaning of the statement. Okay? So it really involves also the concept of preparation for life. A person's goal of preparing for life should be not in terms of his career, but his essential career must be his involvement in knowledge. It's an interesting thing, but to most of the world, what a person really does for his living is his essence. I just see when people meet, they'll always ask you, what are you doing? Or, you know, well, I'm involved in learning. I'm learning menachas. No. It's not exactly what they're asking you. What they're asking you is what you're doing to earn a living. So you see that most people's essential preoccupation is in the area of earning a living. And that is really what they consider themselves to be into, to be involved in. That's the main involvement. Okay? And the statement means to say it's against the whole concept that most people have. Because most people live, their essence is really for what they do in life. A person feels that, what is he going to do in life? I'd like to become a physician. Feels that's his life. His life is the essence of his life is being a doctor, or the essence of his life is a businessman, whatever it might be. But that the point is that his whole the way he views life is that is the essence. And the side time that he has, he pursues his different hobbies or whatever different interests. But no, the Mishnah says that a person's essential preoccupation must be in pursuit of chachma. That's his preoccupation. And making earning a living doesn't define the essence and nature of the person. It's more than just a time thing that the Mishnah is talking about. The Mishnah is talking about an outlook that a person has insofar as his own self identity is concerned. His identity. So the Mishnah says that a person's identity must be his pursuit of knowledge. It's pursuit of knowledge. And it is impossible, it seems, the Mishnah maintains, except under rare circumstances, that a person's essence should involve most of his day. It doesn't make any sense. A person, most of his day, a person is involved in business, then he's a businessman. If most of his day is involved in Torah, and he does business on the side, so then he's a Talmud Chacham. It's a different mental attitude insofar as he's concerned. It is possible in rare occasions that a person's main concept of himself should be a Talmud Chacham, and under unfortunate circumstances he must involve himself in different things. But that's a rare, the Mishnah isn't, so we're not talking about the rare cases. The Mishnah is talking about the norm, the general situation. General situation, if most of a person's day is involved in pursuing his profession or in earning a living, so then that's his essence. That mentally, that's his essence. Okay? That's why a Talmud Chacham can't possibly see himself living in a way that most of his time is preoccupied in earning a living. It's a total distortion of the definition of man. Because the earning of a living is only a means, and everything else is all his energies essentially are, insofar as he is concerned, the pursuit of chachma. So it's a different, completely different mental attitude. It means to say that a person who has this attitude must set up his life in a way that's the main part of his day. As the mind, the asik, lasot b'tara. That's what the Mishnah says. Okay. Now the Mishnah goes on. The Mishnah says, the heavy shefal ruach, the fnei kol adam. And you should be a humble person before every individual. You should be a humble person. Okay, what does this mean? So the Rambam says like this. The Rambam says, Ratzaloma, Shalotei Shfal Ruach Befnei Agdol Levad. You shouldn't be a humble person in front of great people alone. Omnom Befnei Kol Adam. No, you should be a Shfal Ruach, a humble person in front of every single individual. Interesting statement. It's like this. Ad until it reaches a point. Whenever you sit down and communicate with any person, who it might be, whoever it might be, he says it should be, your discussion with him should be as if he is greater than you, insofar as his personal esteem. He's a greater person. He's a greater b'mayla. He's a higher person than you, on a higher level than you. V'zeh kulo levroch ben agaiva. And this, the purpose of this is that a person should run away from haughtiness. The way we explain it. He should escape from haughtiness. Okay. We have to understand what kind of a suggestion this is. It means to say, if a a person, a Talmud Chacham, and sits down with a boor, a person that's with Uranus, you should talk to him as if this person is greater than him. Doesn't make any sense. And yeah, this is a religion of reality. You can't distort a reality. Another person is a total fool. I'm going to talk to him as if he's a great Chacham. What is it? When it says Gadol b'Ma'ala Macha, it means that he's on a higher plane, he's on a higher level. He has better traits than you. He's better in terms of his personal perfection. He's better in terms of his knowledge. So what kind of advice is this? Doesn't make any sense. In Yadis we say that the whole essence of Yadis is pursuit of Chachma, knowledge, reality, to understand reality. So how could I sit down with a person and talk to him? I know this person is totally ignorant around us and treat him as if he's a great Chacham. Gadol b'Ma'ala means he's in a greater state of perfection when he actually in fact doesn't represent perfection at all. Okay, and he doesn't seem to say, it's not like having done a Skalom Lakav's course where you don't know the person. It seems to be, even when you know the person, is not an individual that's of any high esteem, any high merit, doesn't warrant any type of respect, any of his accomplishments, his traits, his perfection. But nevertheless, I have to treat him as if he's greater than me. What kind of a suggestion is this? Another point we have to understand is what this has to do with the previous part of the statement. Because it combines both. It's very short, but the words he uses are very choice words. Ad sheketeshevim eze odom sheyiyah. If you sit down to talk with any person that it might be, any individual, he says, Yesi porcha imo ki'ilu hu gadol ki'ilu hu gadol b'mali atrofa. You speak of him as if he's greater than you. Zevi Shvah Ruch Zeh Kolodav. So Rabbeinu Yonah points out appropriately, he says like this, that he says, Ratzaloma, he says like this. What he means to say is, Ki satliach v'torah, that when you're successful in Torah, it means you become a great scholar, a great Talmud Chacham. Shehi amaylo hamitis. This is the ultimate perfection. Okay? Velotis goyah. Zain tzorach lomar ki mitnei amaylos acheros nochrios, gashmios, she'ein roilis goos. He says it doesn't mean to say that that if you achieve perfection in some of the lower areas of perfection, in the physical areas, he says, but even when you've achieved perfection in the areas of knowledge, of Torah, which is the ultimate perfection, the only thing that a person should feel, could actually feel haughty about, or should feel happy about. He says, Vevishval Ruch b'fnei kol odom, v'gam b'fnei ha-shvolim v'nivzim v'apchusim. He says it openly. He spoke it openly. Even from the low-lifers, lowest people, k'deilis rachek m'midas ha-gaiva, v'ein tzorach lomar b'fnei ha-shokol v'masim. It means you're talking to a drug addict. So you're Makhliyev, a great Talmud Chacham. He's talking to a Nivzim, Shvulim, Shvulim, Chusim, the lowest level of society. When you're dealing with a person like this, you should still talk to him as if he's a great greater than you. That's pretty clear. Rachik Menagaiva. They both say, Kedemus Rachamadi, in order to keep away, in order for a person to withdraw from haughtiness. Yes. The Varadok. Sounds like the Varadok and Musa. Right? Here is based upon a piece of psychology. See? And really it shows you what the definition of anivus is. See, basically what it means is, what Rabbi Rosenthal's mentioning is true, which is that a person could use anything in the world as a means for his own egoistic satisfaction, personal egoistic satisfaction. Even Torah could be used for that. I mean, we know that. That's why Chazal say that a person can be a great scholar, great Talmud Chacham, and his whole life is worthless if, in fact, everything that he does, all his knowledge, serves one purpose, and that's to enhance his ego. But what it means is like this, that a person by nature has a strong narcissistic drive, very strong narcissistic drive, which is basically to feel that he has great importance. Now, this importance that he feels expresses itself not in absolute terms, strangely enough, but in relative terms. In relative terms. I'll give you an example. For instance, a person could be on the highest level, in terms of a social standing, and yet he can go out on a court and play a game of tennis, and at that moment, the only thing that's important to him is he a good tennis player? And he'll feel horrible if he loses a game, if he loses a point. I mean, it shows you the insanity of a person. I mean, here's the one. Why should he feel terrible? In terms of socially, he could be the most important individual in the society. But nevertheless, at this moment, his ego is reduced because he couldn't get that shot, which is an absurd kind of thing. But at that moment, he will feel that way, you see, because the nature of a person's ego and the nature of a person's narcissism is that it expresses itself. The reality becomes the relative. And whatever area becomes the area that he's involved in relatively to another person, this area becomes the barometer through which he's going to judge his own self-esteem. That's why it's possible, you'll see many times, that a person, like, it's very surprising, but you see that a person could be in a very high level, could be insulted if a fool speaks disrespectfully to him. Why should I bother if this person's a fool? The nerve of that guy to talk to me that way, who does he think he is? Because the point is that it's the psychology of man is such that it becomes a one-to-one encounter. And the converse is true also. A person can be a very important individual in society, and a small nobody can give him a compliment, and this will raise his feeling of satisfaction with himself to the highest degree. Okay? Somebody told me recently that he read that a great multimillionaire says that what is his biggest satisfaction in life? This is the reason why he works so hard. Is because when he meets with a person who's a mechanic, the mechanic respects him because he knows how a car operates. He feels terrific. The mechanic said that he knows what he's talking about. I mean, it sounds absurd, because this is the type of compliment I like. That in a fool, a person is so much lower than him, a worthless individual almost in society, can give this great person a compliment. It feels great. It's totally nonsensical. It's the greatest absurdity. But psychologically, it's true. Why? Because the psychology of man is such that a person is not necessarily looking for something that is objective. But a person in looking for anything besides chokhmah is looking really for something in their unconscious mind that they're trying to satisfy. So I have to explain to you, let's take a little bit of in terms of psychological terms, just to make it a little bit clearer, that a child, when he has the praise of a parent, so a child feels very good, he feels very satisfied. Now, when a child grows older, the parental figure is not important, not so important, because he realizes parents are regular people, but it becomes substituted. There's a substitute process where every individual in the society represents that figure. So what happens is like this. What happens is that if a person gives him a compliment, it's not this person's compliment that he's looking for, but this person reflects something from another source that he's unaware of, that he's really looking for. He's a representative, and therefore this worthless individual can be a representative of his unconscious desire, and at that moment this is the individual, this small person represents the fantasy that he's after. So the fantasy that he's after doesn't have to be produced necessarily at all times by important people. Of course, important people serve the purpose to a much greater degree. But even the person is always looking for it. So any individual that could reflect that quality will be enough to give him that boost to his ego. Even the most worthless individual, if he's in a society, it's all relative, of course. If he's at a big banquet with important people, he's not going to look at the worthless person at that time. But if he's in the street, he's alone with somebody, any individual gives him respect, gives him a compliment, he's going to feel great. Because now that individual is the one that represents the fantasy that he's after. You see? The fantasy is represented by different people at different times. And it's not a logical thing. That's why when he's playing tennis, this game becomes the important thing and the most important thing in the world, and getting the shot is the most important activity, and therefore if he can accomplish that most important activity, his ego is inflated, he feels great, he's elated. But it depends on the framework, in other words, could always be changed, so that even a person, a mechanic in a shop, can give this great person a compliment and make him feel great, because at that moment he's in the shop, and this mechanic becomes the individual that reflects his fantasy of being a great person. The fantasy can always attach itself to any person in given situations. That's the way the psychology of the human mind works. That's why a great person can enjoy a compliment from nobody. Plato made that observation. Plato said, when it comes to honor, there's no amount of honor that's worthless. Smallest amount. But from a psychological standpoint, the reason is because the person is after a fantasy that is unachievable and unattainable, and the fantasy just needs a little bit of reality to get it going. So the smallest person can represent that little bit of reality which will get the person's ego going. Okay? So what is a true honor of? A true honor of is a person that has overcome his narcissism. That is the definition, the first premise of an onuf. An onuf is a man that has overcome this mechanism in his psyche. Until a person comes to grips with his fantasies and understands them and recognizes how far away they are from reality, until a person can do that, he can never be an onuf, because he's after a crazy fantasy. Of course, the fantasy, as we mentioned many times, can never be satiated. That's why it can't be satiated. The reason why it can't be satiated is because what he's looking for in reality is not the same thing that he's looking for in the fantasy. The fantasy can never be satiated. It's an infantile fantasy which can never be satiated. But the person keeps looking in reality for little signs that can give him that enjoyment that he's satiating that fantasy. Any little bit of reality is enough. Doesn't need much. A worthless person. Mention he's a great person, he feels terrific all day long. Not sensible, but the point is that this person has catered to that fantasy. You only need a little bit of reality. The mind needs something of reality. The person has a realistic principle in his mind. But if he has that little bit, then he's gone. That's basically what Chazal is saying. That's what the Rambam says, that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. And it's the Mishnah. Every Shval of every, what's the Mishnah? Levi Shval Ruach Lefnei Kol Adam, every single individual. What it means is that a person must, in order to the practical way to counter, Chazal were very big on practicality. They maintain that in order for a person to reach perfection, it's not enough for a person to sit in his room and to just come to grips with his fantasy. It's not that it can't be done. But the point is, that's not important, in other words. That's the essential place that perfection takes place, is in the person's mind. But you must have a practical action in order to break down the fantasy. Without the practicality, you're not going to be successful. Theoretically, you're right. Theoretically, it could be done. But practically, it's not so. Because the ego of man is great, and unless he confronts it on a practical level, he really can't get down to the theoretical. So what is the practical suggestion that the Chazal gave? Very simple practical suggestion. That when you are speaking to an individual, even to the most lowly person in a society, there is at that moment in you a desire to look for that little bit of reality that will give you satisfaction that you are a great individual. Because a person is always looking for that. A person is always looking to satisfy the fact that he's a great person. He's very special. He's very different. You see? Mm-hmm. You notice that they always, I notice that's part of this society's psychology, to tell a child that he's very special. I think this is a good idea. So you're a very special person. Very special person, what does that mean? Why is he special? It doesn't make any sense. What's so special about every child is special, then there's nobody special anymore. It's impossible that's such a phenomenon. But what it is they recognize that there's a fantasy that every person has to think that he is so special and so different and so important, you see, as opposed to other people. So everyone has to feel they're special, which is, of course, the most common trait in man. But the thing, it doesn't matter. Contradictions don't matter because it's not a logical thing. So what Chazal say is that when you confront another individual, you should be aware, no matter how low this person is awakening in you a desire to satisfy that fantasy of your own greatness. You see. So, therefore, they said, counter this psychology, counter this fantasy by treating him as if he is the greater person than you. As if he is the greater person than you. It's a psychological mechanism. In other words, they're not saying it's not a question of evaluation. It's not the point is that they're not trying to say there's not a time to evaluate people. But it means to say that if you don't have the ability to treat even the lowest person as if he is higher than you, that means that when you see this person, you're going to use this individual as a means to satisfy this fantasy and this craving for greatness. So how do you counter that? Very simply. By treating this individual as if he's far greater than you and you are nothing. So that you don't make use in your encounter with any other human being, you don't make use of your desire to follow your fantasy and to allow this little bit of reality to cater to that fantasy. That's the way to overcome the psychological weakness. What? It doesn't mean that you actually think. You see, there's a difference between thinking that this person is a great person and acting that way. The action is what is what is disturbing to the psyche. In other words, to act in a way that a low individual is greater than you is what the psyche is disturbed with. You see? Because in doing that, you're thwarting the benefit of taking this little piece of reality and converting it into your fantasy. That's what Chazal said. But when he encounters the most simple person, immediately his ego is looking for a source of inflation. That's basically what the man is saying. And it could be the lowest individual, but his ego is looking for a boost, and it'll take a boost from the lowest person. So it shows you that an encounter with even the lowest individual is a situation, you see, in which the ego is trying and striving to find satisfaction, because it's looking for that little piece of reality in order to satisfy the fantasy. So as Allah says, to make sure that you don't do that, you treat this person as if, you treat him as if he's greater than you. Because the ego is not, you see, the ego is satisfied not by reality, but by a certain situation. The situation is where you are treated, if you meet the lowest individual and you feel superior to him, that is a satisfaction. Don't think that that rationality is against that. Because rationality says that if you're, how could you possibly care if you're better than this low individual? Okay, the lowest person in society. How can you feel good about it? The answer is you do feel good about it, because this person, no matter how low he is, represents a small reflection of what your fantasy is after. So if you break that fantasy and you treat him as if he is the greatest person, that action is breaking the fantasy of involved in the situation. But the important thing in the memra, the insight that Chazal show in this memra is that even the mind of man, the fantasy part of the human mind, is so unbelievable that even from the lowest person, you are always unconsciously seeking satisfaction in order to substantiate, to satisfy your fantasy. Don't think, because if you met a drug addict and he spoke with him and he complimented you,
you're going to feel great. No matter how low this person is. Why? Because it's not a rational thing. It's based upon a psychological mechanism. That psychological mechanism is that this person, as long as he's a human being, you could imagine this individual could reflect the fantasy that you're after. That's the depth of the statement of Chazal. The Chazal say, make sure that you don't satisfy that. That's what the statement means. And you see clearly, a Pritzker, a multimillionaire, when he's meeting with a mechanic, what is he after? He's looking for that ego satisfaction. He's the lowest person, but his ego is looking for that satisfaction. And that's the most powerful motivation. So powerful that Pritzker maintains his whole life is based upon it. That works 20 hours a day in order to achieve this nonsensical satisfaction. But that's the nature of man. Man's craziness is so unbelievable that unless he has knowledge, unless he's aware of it, he will spend his life in the most absurd, nonsensical kind of involvement. And that's the statement of Chazal. The Shvalot, this may call Adam, even the lowest of the low. Don't think that you are above the satisfaction of receiving a compliment from the lowest human being. It's not true. To be a person in jail that's waiting to be sentenced, it doesn't matter. To be a murderer, any person. You meet with that individual, you're going to feel great. If he compliments you, if he feels that you're a great person, and if you act in a way that you are higher than him, you're satisfying that egoistic desire. That's the statement of Chazal. Okay. This catering to that desire, it's a little bit scary because it shows you that the parent is using the child as a means for their own ego. Now, when the child is in the carriage and he doesn't know anything, so it's not harmful. But it would be very hard to believe that the parent is going to change very quickly within the next year or so and not follow the same kind of motivation. Once the parent continues with that motivation, the child senses it. Unbelievably, parents, the one thing I know about parents, they're not aware of what their children are aware of. They're not aware of it. They assume that he's just a child. The child is very aware. In his own world, the instincts work unbelievably. But the parent isn't in the child's world. The child's instincts are working 100% of the time. And they sense that this is important to the parent, and what they want, their whole life depends upon the parent. So therefore, they're going to strive for that. That fixes the child to be attached to that kind of a thing. Very harmful thing.
It makes it really difficult.
Praise for the good, and praise because others are saying, are excited about what you're doing. There's a difference between those two types of praise. One is harmful, one is necessary.
Why is it harmful? Also,
you have to work with something positive. But the point is, if you praise a child in not in relative terms, but in objective terms, because the child is doing the good, of course, it shouldn't be overdone then either. But if you praise a child because he's doing something good, so then at least the child's attached to the notion of the good. So if he's attached to the notion of the good, so then later in life, will be able to follow that which is the good. It will be a means for the good. But if you praise a child because he has done something socially acceptable, then you are harming the child, because what you're teaching him is that social acceptance is the good. That is bad. True, while Chazal say that what stopped Yosef and Tzadik was the most fictional shalachim, I don't believe that Chazal mean that was the greatest act of perfection. I don't believe what I mean. Because otherwise you'd find Chazal would emphasize the Muzdikno all over. You know, if you only find it by the case of Yeshua Tzadik as a member of Chazal, but in the Torah itself, you never find such a thing. As a matter of fact, you don't find attachment to a Rebbe, even, to be that the Talmud wants to follow the Rebbe. On the contrary, you see a Talmud, if he sees things differently than his Rebbe, he argues with his Rebbe. He's mechuyev to argue with his Rebbe. The Rebbe only presents to the Talmud a system of chokhmah. And basically, I think it's probably the most misunderstood concept in today's society about Yahweh. The relationship between a Rebbe and a Talmud. That people think that the system of the Torah is a system in which a Talmud wants to do that which his Rebbe feels good. In fact, many people think that they say, like, how do people say, how do I make a decision? I make a decision based upon, I think, what would my Rebbe do in this situation? People say that. They say, that's, and this is supposed to be godless. This is supposed to be greatness. I say that that is contrary to the whole system of Yadav. It's not what my Rebbe would do in this situation. That's not what it, that's what your Rebbe left you. He left you with very little. Because what your Rebbe should have left you with is a system of Torah and a system of Chochmah. See, when a person makes a decision, what he should do is he should consult the source of knowledge. That's what a Rebbe's supposed to leave over a Talmud, a source of knowledge. Not that a Talmud's supposed to think to himself, how would my Rebbe do this, and try to imitate his Rebbe. First of all, it's a nonsensical approach. In other words, how does he know what his Rebbe would have done? Situations are so different, and change is very great, and it's impossible for a person to say what his Rebbe would do. It's a nonsensical thing. Besides, if his Rebbe was really a great person, what his Rebbe would do was not to follow his Rebbe, but to follow what the Torah says to do, what Chochmah Talmud dictates to do. So actually, it's impossible to copy your Rebbe. Because you're copying your Rebbe and copying him, you're not copying him. Because he followed, you're maintaining that he was a great Chacham, and he followed the system of Torah. So you're not imitating him, you're not following the system of Torah, you're imitating him, which is imitation, you see. But that's a misconception in Yadav. In Yadav, we never find that Chazal, or the Avos, or anyone sat down and thought, did Yaakov think, what would Avram Avinu have done? I mean, I never saw anything like that. Yaakov consulted the system of Chochmah that Avram Avinu left. That was his legacy. His legacy was a system of Chochmah. And the way for a person to determine his action is based upon looking into the corpus of Chochmah that he has received. That's the method of, that's the relationship between a Rebbe and a Talmud. Not an imitation process or an identification. But it is true that with Yosef HaTzadik, what Chazal say is that with Yosef HaTzadik, when Vayavo Abaisa Lasos Malachto, he was overpowered emotionally. It was a specific situation where he was overpowered emotionally. The instincts had gotten the better of him, but what prevented him was the Dmus Yitro Shalofi. It is true. It is true that that was a beneficial influence, was a counterforce. What Chazal are describing was a tremendous counterforce between the instinctual emotions on the one hand and the image of his father, another more sublimated, sophisticated, more sublimated set of instincts on the other hand. He was caught in a tremendous conflict, emotional conflict. And the emotional conflict was what prevented him from doing the Avera. But that was not the highest, that is not the highest level of refraining from Avera. Chazal don't say that that was the highest level. They say that was the instinct of Yosef HaTzadik. But not that that is the ultimate method. The ultimate way would have been if the instincts would not have even had a hold over him because of Chochmah. As a matter of fact, it's a Rambam. Because the Rambam, when he speaks about Kovesh Yisitra, a person that contains himself against the onslaught of the instinct, a person that has the strength, the Rambam uses one lashon. The Rambam says, Kovesh, when he talks about the Navi, he says, Kovesh es Yitro Bedaito. Bedaito, with his knowledge. Now, the Dmus Diyukno Shalofiv is not Kovesh es Yitro Bedaito. The Torah is describing something that took place with Yosef HaTzadik. But it wasn't the ultimate level. It wasn't the ultimate level because it was, it's true, I mean, a person should, not to say that it wasn't a bad thing that he had the Dmus Yitro Shalofiv, but Chazal describing a psychological conflict, you see. Not the ultimate level. The ultimate level is where his Kovesh is Yitro Bedaito. And that's why you never find anywhere else, you don't find generally through the Torah, the whole idea of the Dmus Yitro Shalofiv. You don't find it. You only find it by the case of Yosef HaTzadik. It means he keeps Tayag Mitzvah. That's what it means. And that's Malchus and Shlokos. The word Malchus is Malachus. It means that he operates his functions in line with the principles of, in line with God's laws. That's what it means. See, Marav Doma La Malchus and Shlokos, it means that the Rav follows, lives a life which is regulated by the halachic laws of God. That's Malachus and Shlokos. About it, but the legacy is knowledge. I mean, you just have to look at the Svarim of Shlomo Melech, of Mishnah and Kohelis. And now it talks about the whole idea of the Chochem Ein HaGerosh and Mika Chochem and Miyadeh Pesha Dover. I mean, straight through. What is the implication of all these psukim? Mishlenka, Ellis, I mean, a tremendous amount. And Tehillim also you find. Tehillim also, people don't realize, you find a tremendous amount of the psukim that refer to the Chochem, a person living according to Chochem Hashem. If the whole the whole idea is to try to imitate somebody, I mean, it's, they're not getting that message across. The message is that if the person understands, what does Rambam say in Hilchos Gerim, in the Yisur Biyah?